Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 27th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Today's show is going to be so short, if you were in a hand with a heads up, you wouldn't even need to call a clock on us.
Hey, every time you say that, we end we get down to the show, and you're like, wow, it's still 45 minutes. And I'm like, yep, we have a way of stretching this out. So
I mean, you could hit play on the show, and right when your family wants to stay graced during your Thanksgiving meal, and we'll be done before they will be. You know, it's going to be over before Roseanne can murder the national anthem. I mean, it's a short show.
It'll be over before you get your COVID rapid test back from your Thanksgiving meal.
I tell you, I am so excited today. Not because the show is going to be short, although admittedly that makes me a little giddy. But like I told you before the show started, I thought I may have figured out the audio issues I was having. Although now you're telling me I sound echoey, so I'm not sure what that means for our listeners post-show.
Yeah, it's like you're in a library. You're like, all right, we're doing the podcast now.
Oh, okay. Well, at least it's okay. So it's not like obnoxiously like feedback or anything. So that's always good. No. Well, for years,
it's certainly better than the clicky, clicky, clicky that you've been doing for the last 17 years.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell. So, I mean, for years, I've owned those awesome noise-canceling headphones. You know, you've seen them on me when we've gone on our flights to poker rooms and stuff. And I didn't even think about using them because I didn't realize they had a mic on it. I thought it was just for volume, but I turned it over today and looked at the backside, and it's got the little poked holes in it for a mic. So I'm like, wow, it actually can be used this way. So the clicking will definitely be gone. You know, I used those regular, like, phone headphones last week, and the audio was just horrible. And I was like, but these, they enclose my Shrek-like ears, so the clicking noise won't be made. So hopefully the audio is acceptable. I'm just pissed it took me this long to realize I could use them, but very excited.
I hope Eddie Murphy is the donkey isn't showing up for the show.
Hey, Shrek! Hey, Shrek!
He made that movie.
Oh, I know, of course.
All right, so 2 weeks ago, we shared a list of quotes from Poker Pros, and last week, one of our listeners shared some of his and asked for more. Well, guess what, Rick Barnes? We've got more! Paul Seaton, who provided the first list, has published a new list on CalvinAir.com, this time all coming from past world champions. And we might have to put Paul on the payroll, Chris, and of course, our payroll is zero.
Yeah, but, zero.
Since he is carrying the show the last couple weeks. Between him and Brandon Huff.
Yeah.
They really made the show work.
Yeah, if they get together and make their own podcast, we're out of business.
Yeah, we're definitely, yeah.
Of course, we're out of business anyway. So you read one, and I'll read two, and you read three, and I really wanted to screw with you before the show, because you would have no idea I would have done this. I was going to make you read one, I was going to read two, I was going to change three to say, it's me, I'm the lone Hall of Famer, Chris Cosenza, and I was going to make you read it, because you would have had no idea, you know? But I was like, I don't know, Scott will take that in the show, changing it up in the middle of the show, but I really wanted to screw with you today.
I am Ron Burgundy, I read everything that's on the screen.
I know, that's what I exactly was hoping, but I was like, no, I don't want to do that to him, because he might get ticked off, and then he'll screw the whole thing up. But
go F yourself, San Diego. Oh, man. All right, here's the first one. I respect anyone that pulls a chair up to a poker table, no matter the stakes, no matter what the stakes are. That comes from Doyle Brunson, a little-known pro that I think is going to take off here in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. He's still around. He's still around.
Booking.
Still around. I always think, when I think of that he's still alive, I always think of the time I was sitting with him at Foxwoods, and the guy walks up to him and says to his girlfriend, that's Doyle Brunson. He's been playing poker for 75 years. Doyle looks at me and rolls his eyes. Like, I've been alive for 74, but whatever.
Yeah, he should have rolled his eyes and like, it's 76, please. That would have been a quick.
That would have been great. Yeah, but obviously, and there's so much gravitas when it comes from people that have, you know, proven the test of time and they're geniuses at what they do. When they say something, you know, that's got a lot more weight with it. So I love that quote.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's right. I mean, you sit down. I mean, think of how many people are too intimidated to sit down at the poker table. That's been one of our big problems in poker, right, is getting people less intimidated to at least sit down. So
yeah,
there's something to be said for sitting down.
Yeah, there's always something for competition, right? For competition, for taking a chance and putting yourself out there and seeing how well you can do, regardless of it being poker or anything else. It's just there's something to be said for someone who is willing to be in front of other people and say, hey, this is what I know, or this is how good I am, or taking a chance. I respect it, too. It's a great, great quote. I came into this tournament as an underdog, and it was only when I busted Johnny Chan that I really started to gain confidence. Chris Moneymaker.
Yeah, I gotta imagine, I'm sure a big moment in all of our poker careers are when we knock a pro out of any tournament, and particularly the main event. I think that would be and not just any pro, world champion.
Yep, exactly. Two-time world champ. Yep. And it was funny because, like, he was just so humble throughout the whole thing, you know, to even say that he had any confidence is shocking to you because you watched him, even in the end, other than when he sat still with Sammy Farhan and didn't, you know, made that bluff and everything. You know, you just thought he was this unsuspecting guy, kid, really. Yeah. And, and to say that he actually had confidence, you know. And, of course, that would give me confidence, too, I guess, if I busted 2-time world champ and almost 3-time world champ Johnny Chan.
There's a difference between confidence and gloating, too, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would imagine a lot of players, particularly now, because you think back when Moneymaker was, I mean, no one was like, it wasn't social media or texting or it was in its infancy, right? So these days now, I mean, as soon as if you're a young kid and knock Johnny Chan out, you'd be all over Twitter bragging about how you just knocked out the world champ, right?
Right.
Since you didn't do that, but he got the confidence to go forward, because that's really what you need at the poker table, right? If you're confident in your decisions, you're going to make good decisions. If you're playing scared, it's eventually going to catch up to you. So
yeah. Yeah. Plus the fact that you would exude the sort of tells if you weren't confident, they would pick up on that too. So the confidence is what makes them throw them for a loop.
Yeah. I mean, chips always give me confidence. You look down, I'm like, oh man, look at all these chips. I'm like, now I'm ready to go. And you just keep rolling. So,
yeah.
All right, quote number 3. Not too many players try to bluff me. If there's going to be bluffing or stealing going on, I'm going to be the one doing it. Johnny Chan.
Yeah. There you go.
Except for, you know, Michael.
I don't know. When I hear these quotes and see these names, I get all nostalgic, you know, even when we had Johnny on the show, or thinking about why he had that orange with him, you know, because he hated the smell of smoke, so he'd peel it a little bit. And it's just, you know, and most of these people, I mean, they're all gone, or, you know, for one reason or another, you don't see them anymore, whether it's because poker's not as prevalent on TV as it used to be, or because these people are older now and they don't play as much or whatever. But, you know, it's kind of sad. You know, can you remember the last time you saw Doyle on TV playing poker, or Johnny, or
I think I've probably seen Doyle play poker more recently than Johnny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the other thing I like about this quote, I've always been a huge Johnny Chan fan. He has been one of those folks that has never disappointed me throughout our life in poker. And you put this quote on with with lots of other players, and you'd like roll your eyes.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But you don't with Johnny Chan, right? I think he's got that quiet swagger, I think, right? So he's super confident. You know, he has all the colored shirts and all that kind of stuff, right? But he's not like I've never seen him like in your face and, you know, acting like he's more than he really is. And of course, I mean, it's hard not to act like more than a 2-time champion, right? So, the quote means a little something more coming from him than it does some other folks.
Well, the beauty of the quote is if you apply it to rounders, it's hilarious.
It is, right?
Right? Because McDermott bluffs him. And it's like, that's the thing. And that shows huge humility that he could be willing to go on a movie that's going to end up being a cult classic, that and to be outplayed in a movie by some unknown. Because when we had him on the show, we're like, yeah, do you fold for one more bet? He's like, yeah, not a chance. You know, but yeah, that's a great quote. Okay, quote number four. I never want to be called a good loser. Show me a good loser, and I'll just show you a loser. Stu Unger.
So here's the yin to the Johnny Chan Yang.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I will give Stu Unger all the credit in the world for being a poker genius, or genius in general, right?
Yeah.
But certainly not a gracious champion in any stretch of the imagination, right?
I loved the stories about him as a kid playing gin and like just beating up on the guys in the Catskills and letting them see the bottom card and still beating them. And after like, you would say after like two pulls, he knew what was in your hand or whatever. I was like, no way, but he did. He was just a genius. That's a tragedy right there. That's a tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, as much as I do think it's an arrogant quote, I mean, it is right. I'm like, you know, if you're not first, you're last, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, again, going back to what Moneymaker said about gaining confidence, that's important. So, you know, if you always are going to be happy with just playing your best, you're never going to become great, right? You're going to always just be good. So you got to have a little bit of swagger. Right?
So does all your culture come from Will Ferrell movies?
Pretty much. Yeah, he's a national treasure, right?
Holy cow! You dropped two like that in a matter of minutes. God. All right. No, it's you. Your turn.
Okay. It's my turn, right? Right.
Yeah.
I play against people all the time who are younger than I was when I won it. One of these guys is going to win. Joe Cotta, talking about the world championship.
It's just a young person's game now, which is why we don't see anybody on this list playing anymore. Other than Joe Cotta.
So yeah, the interesting thing about that is there's the diminishing returns on the youngest champion, right? I mean, you're eventually running out of time. You know,
yeah,
I mean, you have
exactly.
to be 21 to enter, so. You know, until somebody wins it, that's 21 years.
14 days.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. From whenever the beginning of the World Series is to the championship, you're not going to be able to have a younger champion ever again unless they change it and, I don't know, have like a hybrid thing where it's over in 2 days.
Yeah, no, I never thought about that, too. I never thought of how much the November 9 hurt that possibility, too.
Oh yeah,
because you're like I would have won the record had I won it 3 months ago, but you made me wait until November 9, which is 3 months later. You know, I would have set this record by 365 or whatever, 90 more days, whatever. But yeah, it's interesting that you say that. Until they change it to 18-year-old, then you know, have it in Florida.
The other thing, like, you know, I kind of like, do you ever like sit around wanting to go back to your younger Chris Cosenza and slap him and tell him to like. Focus on something.
Oh yeah, all the time.
I mean, I certainly wasn't a slacker growing up. I was an overachiever the whole time, but I just didn't put my talents or my focus into a singular thing. And I don't think that's a bad thing either. I mean, I like that my life is really varied. But had I focused on one thing back then, I mean, who knows? I wouldn't be stuck here recording a show with you right now. I promise you that.
Oh, exactly. That's what I just want to smack Garce around in 2008, just to freaking figure out what we did wrong going into this. I don't even give a crap about 20-year-old Chris. This is 38-year-old Chris is the one I want to smack around. Okay, quote number six. I never felt that pressure to go pro. I told myself I could keep playing as long as I kept winning. Martin Jacobson.
I mean, how many folks have we seen who had a good run of cards, whether it's a month or 3 months or a year, and all of a sudden thought that this was going to be their career and quit everything, quit their job, quit school, and then 2 months later are flat broke, right?
Exactly. There's so much wisdom in this quote. So much grounding, you know, that the person clearly has a grasp on his own situation and life as we know it, the way it should be lived. I think we've talked about, didn't we like bring that up last week too, about how many times have we seen people come out of the gate, you think they're a genius, and then they're serving coffee at Starbucks now,
yeah.
Right? We just basically had that conversation last week, so it's interesting.
We've had that conversation for 15 years.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Recently, we brought it up again. Yes, you're right. So, But here's the difference between poker and, say, baseball or football, right? I mean, baseball or football, you have to be on a professional team to be considered professional, right? You can't just, like, keep playing with your friends and say, hey, I'm a pro. The Sandlot, right? So there's a distinction there, right? But there's not a distinction in poker, right? I mean, I guess the distinction is I do it for a living. But really, you go to the poker room and you play, and it doesn't matter whether you're pro or amateur. Those things don't really apply. So if you're letting the ego get to you where you can walk around and tell people, hey, I'm a professional poker player, rather than just say I'm a poker player, that's going to set you up for failure, I think.
I agree.
Or set you up for a bigger fall. How's that?
Right.
All right. So I do the last one?
Yeah, you got the last one.
I love playing poker. I love the competition. It's not about the money to me. It's going up against the best with your mind, from Chris Ferguson.
Yeah, that's a little self-motivation there. And it's like we talked about with the Doyle Brunson quote about respect to people who just sit up, pull up a chair and play. Same thing here. You know, he loves the competition and he's pitting his wits against other people to see how smart he is or how good he is, how crafty he is. And, you know, it's not entirely about the money to him, but I don't know. I could say something funny here, but I'm not going to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course, if you have all that full tilt money, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
There
exactly.
You go. See, I said it for you.
All right. Thank you.
But no, I mean, there's something about divorcing yourself from the money and just enjoying the competition. At the same time, I think the rest of us are honest that when we're not playing for money, it's not as much fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's a different game at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference between playing for play money on Stars and playing for actual money. I mean, think about how concentrated you are when, you know, you have a $300 payday on the line or you have, you know, a 3,000 chip payday on the line. You know, there's no difference. I mean, there's no comparing them. The difference is significant. So, but I agree with Chris. I mean, it's the whole reason why I do like bonsai competitions or why I bowled all those years and why we play poker. It's just competing and just seeing if you are as good as you think you are or as good as people tell you are. And it's nice to make money. It's always nice to make money.
Yeah, I think it also with the I love the competition. That matters more when the competition is as good or better than you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I could enjoy sitting around a table with 8 other guys who are as good or better than me playing not for money, but just to see who can win. More so than if I, you know, like our, my local Safety Harbor game, which we haven't had forever. You know, most of those folks are not good. So now I'm sitting around playing, and we are playing for a little bit of money, right? But I certainly wouldn't go and play if there wasn't money on the line in that, because it would just be boring.
Right, exactly.
All right, so not bad. So, all right, Rick Barnes, we'll see whether Paul Team comes up with a third list in the future to save us, but if not, hopefully these were more inspiring for you.
So. And we spent a good 15, 20 minutes on that, so the show will be normal now, I guess.
Told you.
Yeah,
told
you're right. You're right.
All right, here's this week's update on casino and poker room reopenings. In California, Palo Casino has permanently closed its poker room. In Indiana, Majestic Star Casino has permanently closed its poker room, but it may reopen when the casino completes its rebranding next spring as a Hard Rock. Details on how the Battery jackpot will be awarded are pending. With a sharp increase in COVID cases and hospitalizations, several governors across the country have issued new orders temporarily closing down casinos or reducing operating hours or capacity, which could have an effect on poker rooms. Not accounting for the recent temporary closings, we now have 208 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And remember that antiupmagazine.com/reopen lists verified details on casino and poker room reopenings. If you have any updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com. And we also email a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com.
Yeah, this is where I change the header to reopenings and reclosings again.
Yeah, that's right.
It's getting worse. Was there something about Minnesota to happen, or did we mention that already?
Yeah, Minnesota is one of those where the poker rooms are shutting down.
That's part of it. Yeah. So we'll see. But
it's just like that. So, but there are several states where that's happening now. So, I mean, obviously the numbers have been scary. So,
yeah.
We'll see what happens. So, So two more rooms permanently closed, though I would imagine the Hard Rock will reopen a room, so that's more of a temporary closing. And I'm sure, obviously, there are more. I mean, I've started now messaging casinos on Facebook if they no longer have poker listed on the website to find out whether it's gone for good or not. And so far, all of them that got back to me have not been willing to say that their room is closed permanently. It's okay. Just closed temporarily. So we'll see. Hopefully those rooms will come back, but who knows?
Okay, Annie updates. Papes, the Annie Up Fans Free Online Tournament Series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/papes, PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, and Annie Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post in the aforementioned Annie Up fans group on Facebook. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from Kirby Steining. He says, "Wife is in seat 3, husband's in seat 7. I'm in seat 6. Only the husband and wife are in the hand by the turn. Dealer makes a mistake by turning over the turn card after the husband checks, but before the wife acts. Dealer calls the floor for guidance on how to proceed. While waiting for the floor, husband tells the dealer to continue because we are not going to play against each other on this hand. This seems like an inappropriate comment to me, so I am relieved when the dealer ignores the husband. Two hands later, I leave the table and the wife asks for a seat change, which puts her right next to her husband. Seems fishy to me. If you were still at the table, would you call the floor to express concern about collusion and request that the husband and wife be seated at different tables?"
Okay, I've got two answers for this one.
All right, good.
And no judgment on our listeners on which answer they would choose for themselves. In a technical sense, this is soft play, right?
Yep.
So you are justified in raising your concerns to the floor. I don't necessarily know whether they're going to make the husband and wife move to different tables, but they would probably enforce the, hey, we're not going to play against each other on this hand comment, right?
Right.
So if that in the technical sense, that is the rule, and if you would like it to be enforced, you have every right to. Now, the other answer I will give is that there are degrees of soft play inclusion out there. And, an older husband, older wife out there just having fun, it makes sense that they don't want to play against each other. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to affect the game in any way. It could, but it probably won't. So on my radar, this is something that is not going to concern me. I'm not going to worry about it. But that's me. So you are more than justified in making this an issue if you feel differently. So.
Yeah, and I'm probably just going to have a stream of consciousness here as I talk. But I mean, there are times where married couples are at the table and they fight each other harder than anyone else for the pot.
Absolutely.
And then there are other times where the guy's like, you know, I know I got the best hand here. I'm not going to get any more money out of her. I'm going to check it down. Or she's like, you know what? I don't want to embarrass him in front of his friends or whatever. But when this gets verbalized and he says it out loud, now you got to start to think back about, okay, well, were they soft playing each other earlier, or were they working together to get someone out in the middle like me? You know, because she would raise, I would call, he would know he's last to act, and he would re-raise, she would call, and then I would fold. You know, I mean, there is a fine line between collusion and you know, marital bliss.
Sure.
So it is interesting. I don't know what I would do in this situation. If it were on the ship, I would do nothing except, you know, maybe talk to them afterward because it's a business and I'm playing with them and I own the business. Or I might ask the other players at the table, or are you concerned about having married couples at the table? Because there are times that, you know, 11 o'clock at night, there's only two tables going, and one is Omaha and one is Hold'em, and they both want to play Hold'em, and we need a seat filled. I'm not going to stop them from playing together.
Sure.
But the thing that bothers me the most about this instance is, if they know they're not going to play against each other, why are they sitting at the same table?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, here's why this doesn't bother me as much as it might bother other folks. I'm making assumptions here based on the information we have. But I'm making the assumption that this is a couple that just likes to go to the casino and play cards together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where this – I don't think this comment – obviously, taking it in black and white, it's wrong. But in the moment in real life, I think there's a different interpretation of what that is. So I think, again, they just go to the poker room. They want to play cards together. I mean, it's a lot like, you know, hey, if we go to you and I go to Vegas together, you know, I mean, we want to be social with each other. We want to be at the same table so we can talk in between hands. And it's easier to talk when we're sitting next to each other.
Yeah, right? So, yeah.
You know, I always found that kind of more fun. I've never sat at a table with a friend to collude. But I've always enjoyed, you know, sitting at a table and having conversation. Like, you know, it's like, I think it was 2 years ago, I was in Vegas with the poker geek and his wife, and we played cards while the wives went off and had fun. And we sat next to each other, and it was a lot of fun because, I mean, we were just playing 1-2 no limit, but in between hands, we were talking about not the poker necessarily, but, you know, how's life in Minnesota? How's life in Florida? Right?
So, right.
So I weren't there to collude, I was there to have a good time. And these low-limit games, a lot of people there are, more people there, I would argue, are there to have a good time rather than to win money and play technical poker.
Yeah, so, given that, though, if you turn to the dealer and it was just you and Geek.
Exactly.
And you say, hey, don't worry about it because we're not going to play against each other. Yes. Now people are going to have a problem with it.
I will admit that statement was unfortunate.
Yeah, it was.
So again, you know, you're certainly justified in making the complaints, and you're certainly not going to get any criticism from me because that is a technical sense, and it's a slippery slope, right? You know, you don't know. I mean, it could get worse. So
yeah, absolutely.
But for me, you know, I generally try to avoid issues at the table that don't overly bother me. So, I mean, if I was in a game where I was way over my head, you know, like our O'Malley's move this week is he's up in a 5-10 game with a lot of money on the table, right, compared to what he normally plays. I would have a different opinion, I think. But if I'm at a 3-6 limit game just killing time and Mountain and Mrs. Rushmore want to sit next to each other, and that's not going to be something that bothers me. But.
Wow, what a segue.
Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. Here comes a new O'Malley's move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we've overextended ourselves a bit, and we're at a $5, $10 no-limit hold'em home game. The max buy-in here is $1,500, which we bought in for, and currently have $2,200. The game is eight-handed, and we've been playing for roughly 4 hours. This is a pretty straightforward game, with no one stepping too far out of line. Raises tend to be respected pre-flop, and three bets are usually legit. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and the plus one makes it $35 to go. This player has only been here for about an hour and has his starting stack intact. He sits with 1,500. He hasn't shown down any hands, but he's won two pots after raising preflop and c-betting the flop, and lost one on a fold after a four flush was made on the turn. The hijack calls, and we're on the cutoff with the ace of spades, queen of spades. This is a premium hand, but not one I would like to simply call with. Since the plus one raised and three bets have been getting respect, I'd like to raise here for some range definition, but also for value. I can entertain a fold here, but I think a suited ace-queen is too strong for that. We account for the limper and make it 150 to go, to discourage the button and any blinds from coming along. It's folded to the plus one, who thinks for a while, probably 30 seconds, and then makes the call. The hijack folds. There's 335 in the pot, and the flop is the ace of diamonds, eight of diamonds, deuce of clubs. Once again, the plus one thinks for about a half a minute and then checks. Other than the diamonds, I don't mind this flop at all. We are going to make a bet. We count out 200 and put it in the middle. The plus one thinks briefly and then calls. There's 735 in the pot and the turn is the nine of spades. The plus one again thinks and then checks. Yes, if we were ahead on the flop, we are probably still ahead. But this pot is already bloated, and I think erring on the side of caution is what's best here. We check for pot control. The pot stands at 735, and the river is the six of hearts, basically a blank. The plus one thinks for a short period of time before betting 400. So, if we call and lose, our profits have disappeared. If we call and win, we're in a good position to post a win for the night. Is there a case for raising here? What's the move?
All right, it's time for the Advanced PokerTrading.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you want to make friends in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. So weird, Chris, after 2 months of not having Brandon Huff.
I know. It's bizarre.
So, don't worry. We got a couple of his stored up. But in these last 8 weeks, a lot of you have sent hands in. So it's good to
much
catch up and get different... A different take on poker.
Absolutely.
So. All right, so this week's hand is from Mike Buck, which is fascinating because I went to high school with a Mike Buck.
Wow, didn't we all?
What are the chances that there are two Mike Bucks out there? I mean, those are two really unique names. So I'm going to be sure that I'm fairly certain that this is not the Mike Buck I went to high school from because he's from the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's see. He says, I've been a listener from the UK for a few years now, but this is my first Hand of the Week submission. Thank you, Mike. He says, this just happened tonight. Of course, not actually tonight.
Right.
It's been stored around.
That'd be hard to do.
So my thoughts are still fresh. It was on PokerStars in a 5-cent, 10-cent cash game. And I've only been at the table for 5 minutes, have no knowledge on the other players.
Okay.
All right, so this is a PokerStars hand history, which is fantastic because we have all the information that we need to properly discuss it. It's also confusing because now I got to read a hand history. So, all right, let's see. We got a early position player raises to 30 cents.
Okay.
We have another caller, and let's see. We are in the big blind with the six of hearts, six of diamonds. So, early position raiser, one caller, and we are last act in the hand.
Pretty standard. You know, just call, set mine. If you miss it, get out. Even if it's unders, you might not want to take on too much pressure because under the gun, raising generally means big cards. Could be a big pair over your sixes. Could be any pair over your sixes. So, I tread lightly, but I would definitely, it warrants a call. So, I don't think I want to raise because you open up the raising again to that initial under the gun raiser and that or early position raiser, and that person comes over the top again hoping that you have king king and he has ace ace or something like that, and you're just wasting money here. This is just a paltry pair of sixes. Let's get in for as cheap as possible, flop a set, and hope we can rake in the dough.
What Chris said. I'm not gonna add anything to it.
Yay.
I'm trying to keep this show short to make you happy.
Yay.
All right, the flop is the 10 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of clubs. So we flopped a bottom set, and we are first to act.
Well, I kind of like a bet here. Because we don't know anything about people, generally you have to fall back on the ABCs of poker and the stereotypes, and people who raise in early position, especially at this level, they're just learning the game, and they're probably reading books and learning you have to raise in early position and 3X and all that. And so, you know, a lot of times they're supposed to have a big hand. So betting into them is kind of fun. And you have another player in the hand as well. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to lose someone. But if you do, you might still keep someone else on if you bet. So I kind of like a bet. If I knew the person was the type of player that only raised with big hands, I definitely would bet. If I was falling back on, all right, let me just check because I don't like I missed and do a check raise or something, you could do that too. It's a little bit of a wet board. You know, 6, 7, 10, already 8, 9's got a better hand than us. So, and that's a very plausible hand. And there are spades out there. So I like the bet to to get the overcards. If the guy's got ace 10 or something, he's a top pair, top kicker. If he's got king king or something, we got him crushed. So I don't mind a bet here. I would probably bet. So what do we say is in the pot, like a dollar, something like that?
Let's see. Usually it tells us this, but it would be 95 cents.
Okay, so I don't mind betting, you know, 80 cents here or 75 cents or something. I don't mind that because I realize it could go fold, and you're like, oh, I just wasted a set. But more times than not, when a blind donk bets like this, you know, they're trying to steal it, trying to think, okay, you only raised because you had ace-king and you've missed this flop, so I'm going to bet and steal it because I'm supposed to have baby cards here, and baby cards came out for the most part. People like to play back at you online, especially at these levels. And plus, you know, it's a wet board. I wouldn't mind thinning it or at least making them pay the price to hit the two spades that they have in their hand or to hit the random, you know, 10-9 they have for a gutter to, you know, stuff like that. So I don't mind putting a bet out there. How about you?
Yeah, I think I favor a bet here, too. I mean, you could check if you felt confident that the initial raiser was going to put a C-bet in. I mean, it's a weird-looking board, so people, I wouldn't think, would give you credit for a set here. They might think you've got a vulnerable 10 that you're trying to protect, so that's pretty good. And of course, you got a third player in. I mean, I don't know really what the bet is here to drive out spade draw. That's a legitimate bet, so I don't know if you're really going to get anybody out. I'm not so entirely sure I want anybody out of this hand either with a set.
So. Right, we're always lectured about saying that. We don't mean that we want to get the draw out, but we want to at least make them pay to draw so that when they miss, like they normally would do, we get the most money out of it and they just fold in the end. You know?
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, here's the other thing, too, is that they are drawing. We want to get our money in good right now, right? So we want to get them to keep paying, and then, you know, hopefully they miss those draws on the next two streets as well, too, and we rack up a pretty nice pot. So,
right.
So yeah, I think I'm inclined to bet here.
Cool.
All right. That's what our hero does. He bets 45 cents, and the original raiser calls, but the other player folds. So we are heads up, going to the turn, which is the 7 of clubs. So our board now is 10 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of clubs, 7 of clubs. And we no longer are worried about the flush getting there and no longer worried about the straight that might have been there, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is where it gets interesting. The guy called. If you're getting really crafty, you could do a check because now you're afraid he called. Like, okay, I give up. I tried to steal it on the flop and then you called me. So clearly you have a hand and, you know, check to him and then maybe he makes a big bet and then you check raise or something. But I also would advocate betting again because you took control of the hand and it would disguise it. They would think, oh, anybody who has a full house here is not going to keep betting. So he maybe just has a lone 10 and my queens are still good or something. So I don't know. I probably would bet, I don't know, half the pot. I probably would bet. I know it sounds like, you know, in the moment, you probably wouldn't bet. You're at a live table. You might not bet because you're thinking, oh, I got a full house. I can't lose. Let him bet. But I guess I would have to feel it out. Since it's online, there's not really much to feel out. I want to continue with the confidence and make them think, okay, there's no way he would have bet a boat here or quads. So let's think he has a 10 and I have jack-jack and I'm still ahead. And, you know, so I'm going to bet and see if he calls.
Yeah, this is, a difficult position to be in. I mean, obviously, our hand improved. But we got to figure out the best way to get value out of his hand, I think, right? So the checking here, as you mentioned, kind of sets you up as, you know, hey, you put a little probing bet out there to find out where you were, and you got scared off. So the check to induce a bet is an interesting play. What you do with that, I don't know. I mean, I would assume if I'm going to do that, I might just check raise because you call, and then what do you do on the river then? Do you check? And then he's probably going to check behind, so you're going to limit your value there. Betting out is probably a better move, I think. Sure, you might drive somebody out, but it's hard for me to imagine that somebody's going to think that 7 helped you as much as another card might have been. So you're more likely to get called here and then be able to put a river bet out and get a call there too.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, our hero does do the check move instead. His opponent bets $1.77, back to us.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, if this guy now, or woman, doesn't matter, this player is confident that they have the best hand, I would love to raise a bunch. I realize that, again, we're hitting all these same points that you could just make him fold, that he bluffed at it, now you've raised, and you're not going to get any more money out of him. But if you checked again on the next street after calling, maybe he'll bluff at it again. But in this case, I don't mind shoving, because maybe this guy has got a flush draw, and he's just happy to be able to semi-bluff, like David Sklansky would tell you. But in this case, I think I'm going to raise now. What I'm hoping that bet says that he's confident his jacks are good against my jack 10, or his queens are against my jack 10 or something. And so I would like to now raise and probably just put them all in. I mean, he's a $10 player, so it's probably not that much out there. So whatever my stack is, yeah, to get him.
Our opponent started the hand with 642, and we started with 985.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, we're going to get there anyway, so let's just put them all in now and hope he has jack-jack and doesn't hit a jack on the end.
Yeah, I really think that's now that we've checked, I think the value play here is to check raise here and try to get more money in here rather than, you know, as I mentioned before, calling. And then, I mean, what do? You bet out again on the river. That's going to seem fishy. So you're going to be forced to check and then hope that he puts a bet in at that point. I'm much better off, I think, check raising here getting the value now, hopefully.
Okay.
All right, our hero calls. And so we go to the river, which is the six of spades. So our final board is 10 of spades, 7 of spades, 6 of clubs, 7 of clubs, 6 of spades, Ricky Tiki Tavi.
That's a horrible card for us.
you're already seeing what's going to happen.
Yeah, right? It's either 7-7 or 8-9 of spades. This is just horrible. But of course, I'll make a value bet of something, whatever it would be, a third of his stack or a third of the pot, whatever. I would make some sort of value bet here. $150, $180. Oh, that sucks. I know it's going to, because there's no way. He's not, very, very rarely do people send in hands to brag. You know, they're sending them in because they lost and they want to know what the hell they could have done differently to not lose their stack. So it's terrible. But in the real world, without knowing it's a hand of the week, I would bet probably a value bet here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, our opponent's still interested in his hand. Maybe because we checked and he bet and we called, it makes things a little bit more difficult here. But we can't chance that he's not going to check behind, knock anything out. So we got to bet something here. So
right,
it's just
right.
A matter of what we think he's going to call. And you're right. Obviously, hand of the week, I'm not going to be surprised at all if that hand that we are thinking about is turned over. And if that does happen, I'm going to feel tragic because that is a legitimate bad beat in a real casino.
Yep.
And instead, you're playing 5 cent, 10 cent online and don't get anything out of it but a bad story. So, all right, our hero bets $2.57. Opponent raises all in, and it's back to us.
Yeah, we call. I mean, we have to call. We know we lost.
We know that last $1.33 is going right down the toilet because our opponent shows the 9 of spades, 8 of spades with a straight flush.
Oh, no.
And wins a $12.60 pot. So here's our hero. So he says, pre-flop, I think my call was 6-6 to standard. On the flop, I didn't want to give any free cards as the board is scary for bottom set with a straight already possible and a flush draw. On the turn, I'm happy to check, hoping he thinks I just donked the flop and have given up. When he bets, I think raising would scare him away, so I elect to call. In hindsight, raising would have made no difference, as I'm sure he would have called with the made straight and the open-ended straight flush draw. No thought process needed on the river. A little smiley face. A few years ago, this happened to me in a live tournament. That time, I flopped quad aces. My opponent had king-queen and turned a royal flush. I was proud back then. I actually made a crying call and correctly named his hand before calling, but tonight I generally had no consideration that he could have had the better hand.
What's interesting now when you think about it is the guy flopped the nut straight and he's thinking in his head, don't pair the board, don't pair the board, don't pair the board. Then the board pairs and now he's like, okay, give me a spade, give me a spade. But he's all saying, give me the spade. You know what I mean? He needs this the perfect spade, you know, the jack of spades or the six of spades. And then he gets it. You know, that's unbelievable. That's the... That's the Chris Cosenza taking the keyboard and throwing it across the room flashback that I'm having when I had the nut flush and the guy one outs me on the river with the straight flush. I lose like a $600 pot online. But yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal, but it happens. And so let's revisit the hand real quick. Pre-flop. Now, was this the raiser or the caller in the hand? I forget.
This was the raiser, yeah.
So he raises with 9-8 of spades. Correct. Which is perfectly fine, especially because he's not under the gun, right? He's just in early position.
Under the gun plus one, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are the types of hands. This is what Scott Long would do. You know, these are the types of hands that you raise with because people will put you on the high cards, which is what we talked about throughout the hand. Let's hope it's jack-jack, queen-queen, king-king, ace-ace or something now that we've made our set. And then he has, you know, we bet into him and he's just licking his chops. He's like, thank you for betting into me. I'm just going to call you, right? And that's what we, all right? Because then now a turn comes, we give up. Now he's like, okay, well, now the board's paired. Maybe I should put a value bet out, or maybe I should put something out because in case this guy has a random 10 and another 7 or another 10 comes.
Oh, it was on a higher flush draw, too. So
right, or a higher flush draw.
Yeah, right?
Right, exactly.
Even though you went from the penthouse to the outhouse there, you need to keep the pressure on because we you know, feign weakness, right?
So. Yep. Now, here's the problem with baby stakes like this. If you were in a bigger game and a much more quality game, like Scott was talking about earlier, where you want to play with people who are as good as you or better than you, in a game like that, and you're deep and they're deep, a big enough bet on that turn, you know, check raise that you did, or no, you just called, but if we did check raise, because he was asking, right, if you would have done it differently. On, yep. I think on the turn, you actually might get this person to lay it down. They may believe you have the boat. There are people who make hero folds like that, especially at that level, and they would have been right to fold at that moment because they're really just two outs now that can give them the winning hand if they believe yep. you have a boat. So that's the only thing. But in this instance, in this hand, at these stakes, there's no chance this guy folds.
Yeah.
And, yeah. There's no way to get him out. So I don't think you've played it wrong other than now it's hindsight. We could say, okay, I would have checked. We both said we would have check-raised the turn or bet the turn instead of check-raised. And he did neither of those things. He checked and then called. We would have bet out and then not bet out. We would at least check-raised if we had the opportunity. And he didn't do. Other than that, I mean, just from a general playing standpoint, that's what I would have done. It wouldn't have changed the outcome in this hand, but no. Normally, if he was deeper in another game and he didn't actually have that specific hand, he may folds to your check raise and then may fold to check raise, and then that's it. So, I don't know. I don't think he played it wrong. I think it's just one of those, yeah, you get pit in your stomach that you, but luckily, it's only $10, you know, yeah. And not, you know, $1,000. So I don't have a problem. Yeah,
this is kind of one of the rare hands where I think both players played it pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree with the guy, the way the guy, the villain. I don't disagree the way he played it really at all. I mean, he raised for disguising it, and it's a pretty good hand. Those are the types of hands that can bust people, which clearly did.
Yeah.
Then the flop comes and we bet into him, so he's like, hey, go ahead, walk the dog, you know. Yeah. And he calls, and then when we check, he's like, all right, I'm going to protect my hand now. He did. And the river, we bet into him again, and he just raised all in, obviously, for, you know, what, $1.50 more or something. So, yeah, this is a pretty clean hand, but worthy of discussion.
And from our opponent's perspective, this is why poker is so much fun and so frustrating at the same time, right?
Yep.
You know, you get a little squirrely. Again, I love to play suited connectors under the gun, plus one. So, I mean, I would have done the same thing. But you play that, and you get rewarded by flopping the straight and the straight flush draw, right?
Yeah.
And then the board pairs, and you're like, oh my god, you got to be kidding me.
Of course.
And then you hit one of your outs to get the straight flush. So super roller coaster there.
But. Yeah, unbelievable. Well, it turns out Roseanne did get to finish the national anthem. We actually ended up having a long show after all. Shocking.
Oh man.
Well, enjoy your holiday weekend for those of you who are in America, and thanks for listening. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.